We're holding on Ayin Dalad Amud Aleph, the beginning of the new Perek. The subject of our Perek, there's going to be a couple of different subjects. We're still talking about the Korban Pesach, of course. So first we're going to talk about the dinim of roasting the Korban Pesach in the first couple of Mishnayos. Then we're going to talk about dinim having to do with the Pesach being Tomei or the people being Tomei or whatever, which also has to do with eating it, because we said that we were going to say that the Pesach is unique among Korbanos that are brought Betumah, where you eat it Betumah as well. Unlike there are other Korbanos, you can bring Betumah, but you don't eat them Betumah. And then further on in the Perek, we're going to talk about various dinim of what happens if the, we're going to talk about various dinim about what happens if the meat of the korban becomes tamei, and the dinim about breaking the bones of it, and the dinim about that you're not allowed to eat it outside of the group, etc. The various dinim, various special dinim that apply to the Pesach in that are in Parshas Bo'i. So those are going to be those are going to be later on in the Perek. But first, we're going to start with details about roasting the korban Pesach. We already learned previously towards the end of the second Perek, that that you're not allowed to eat the korban Pesach na, which was half roasted or mavushal or cooked. So now we're going to talk about the details of how you go about roasting it. The Mishnah says ketzad solanas haPesach. How do you roast the korban Pesach? Mevin shvud shol rimon. What you do is you take a long piece of wood from a pomegranate tree, and we'll see in the Gemara why dafka pomegranate. You stick one end of it into the mouth of the animal, so the animal's been shechted. So you go from one end of it goes in the mouth, ad beis nekuvasai, all the way until the anus. So it's going straight through the body. One point is that way it's going through the areas of the body that are more or less hollow. I mean, you have the internal organs, but those were all removed, as we're going to say in a second. So that way, the point is, in other words, if you did it any other way, you'd end up breaking bones as you're putting the spit in. And of course, the Torah tells us you can't break bones in the Korban Pesach. Tosfos also points out what you do is you have the wider end of the spit goes through the mouth, and then the narrower end sticks out the other end. The point is, then what you do is you hang it in the oven, head down, and that way the blood that's inside, because after all, you're not kashering it like regular meat, you're only roasting it. So this way, the blood that comes out of it is going to be able to flow out through the incision in the neck, through the beis hashchita. Okay, so you do that. The noisiness kroves mnei meyav l'soichei divir Rabbi Yisag Lili. Now, what you do is in the course of preparing the Korban Pesach, while they were preparing it in the Beis Hamikdash and skinning it and cutting it up and whatever, they cut off the legs and they cut off the bnei me'ayim, the intestines, because those had to be washed. We learned at the beginning of the previous Perek that there was something with the intestines you could do on Shabbos. You could remove the waste. You could make a hole so that the waste comes out. Good morning, Ellie. You could take off the mucus layer of it, so it doesn't, even on Shabbos, so it doesn't spoil. But the rest of it, the washing, we said, had to be done after Shabbos. But ultimately, you would do that. You would wash it. Also, the legs had to be washed. So now, what do you do with those? So Rabbi Yisag Lili says you put them inside the body of the Korban Pesach, and they'll roast inside there. Rabbi Akiva says, no, come in bishul huzeh. Doing it like that is a little bit like cooking them, because they're inside the animal. It's like cooking them inside a pot. Ela tolim chutzalai. So rather, what they do is they hang the legs and the bnei me'ayim outside the animal on the spit. By the head, above the head, or really actually when you hang the Korban Pesach facing downward, like we said before, then it's actually below the head. But in other words, you have the body of the Korban Pesach, and then next to the head are these krov and bnei me'ayim, and that way they're not roasting inside the animal. Okay. The Mishnah continues, Ein solanas haPesach loyal shvud v'loyal askala. You're not allowed to roast the Korban Pesach on a metal spit, as we'll see in the Gemara. The point is that metal, unlike wood, conducts heat. The Gemara is going to call it cham miktsase cham koloi. If part of it becomes hot, then the whole thing becomes hot. So therefore, if you use a metal spit, what ends up happening is that the part that's inside the animal also gets hot because it conducts heat. Therefore, it comes out that the parts of the Korban Pesach that are touching the metal spit end up getting roasted from the heat of that rather than directly from the heat of the fire. And that's no good because the Torah says that the Korban Pesach has to be tzli esh, roasted with fire, implying not roasted with something else hot. So therefore, you can't use a metal spit. V'loyala askala, and also you can't roast the Korban Pesach on a grill. For the same reason, because then it's going to be roasted by the heat where it touches the grill rather than directly by the heat of the fire. Amar Reb Tzadik, on the other hand, Reb Tzadik says, Maisa b'Reb Gamliel, it happened with Reb Gamliel, Sha'amala Tavi Avdai, that he said to his servant Tavi, Tseu Tzleilonu as a Pesach ala Askala, go roast the Korban Pesach for us on a grill. So the Gemara is going to ask, what happened in the Gemara tomorrow? What do you mean? We just said you're not allowed to roast it on a grill. There's an interesting side issue here. Historically, Reb Gamliel, we know, became Nasi only after the Churban. Unless we meant Reb Gamliel HaZaken, but usually when it means Reb Gamliel HaZaken, usually the Mishnah says so. So what? How are we having him telling Tavi to roast a Korban Pesach anyway? So now, one obvious possibility is that we are in fact talking about Reb Gamliel HaZaken over here. On the other hand, we don't really find Reb Gamliel HaZaken having a servant named Tavi. Reb Gamliel Diavne, his grandson, who was after the Churban, we find in many places in Shas where he had a servant Tavi. In Brachas, we had, for example. So there's a few possibilities. Again, it could be Reb Gamliel HaZaken, and just left out the word HaZaken. As far as Tavi, it could be, of course, Dodo Soda Shonim says it this way, that it could be that Reb Gamliel HaZaken originally owned him, and then Reb Gamliel Diavne inherited him. So therefore, it is the same Tavi. There's also a possibility that the Gemara, that I think there's a Yerushalmi that says that in general, the family of the Nasiim called their male servants Tavi and their female ones Tavisa. So it's not necessarily the same Tavi as the rest of Shas. It could have been an earlier generation. With that said, there are a couple of Achronim that have the interesting idea that maybe we are talking about Reb Gamliel Diavne, and this is after the Churban. And in that case, what's going on over here? Rabbi Yaakov Emden discusses in one of his Trubas the possibility that maybe even after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, we know the halacha is that Amman Paskins, that the place of the Beis Hamikdash did not lose its Kedusha, and therefore you are in principle allowed to bring Korbanos even when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, as long as you know where the place of the Mizbeach is. Well, in the years after the Churban, he says, maybe. I mean, maybe they managed to sneak in there sometimes. Maybe there were some of the Chachamim who had good relations with the Romans and were able to get permission, back channel permission or something, to be able to bring Korbanos over there. So maybe they were able to sneak in and do that. And in that case, then Reb Gamliel Diavne could be bringing a Korban Pesach as well. In fact, historically, there was a number, Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings over here, and a number of other Sfarim bring, how Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris, in the year 5017, so 1257, he moved from France to Eretz Yisrael, and he wanted to bring a Korban Pesach based on this din, and the other Chachamim of that time disagreed with him on it. So we see that there is a concept, maybe, of bringing a Korban Pesach even after the Churban, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Other possibilities, the Rashash says over here, first of all, he says there are Goyish histories that say that Bar Kochva, when he fought against the Romans, that he actually managed to start rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash, and then the Romans came and then defeated him and stopped that. So he says maybe, although we don't really find anything about it in Chazal, but maybe, he says, this is what it's talking about. Another possibility, he says, maybe this wasn't a real Korban Pesach at all, but rather what the Gemara is going to call Gedim Kulas, a sheep or a goat that they would roast in the same way as the Korban Pesach, as a zecher of the Korban Pesach. Now, we learned before on Daf Nun Gimel, we're going to learn again soon in the Gemara, that you're not allowed to do that because it looks like you're eating kodshim outside the Beis Hamikdash. But Reb Gamliel may have disagreed with that and held that you're allowed to, and therefore that's what we'd be talking about over here. Okay. So those are various possibilities about what we're dealing with over here with Reb Gamliel and a Korban Pesach. Okay, so the Gemara asks, why do we dafka need a spit of pomegranate wood? V'nesi shel matches, why can't we use a metal spit? So the answer is, the problem is with metal, when part of it is hot, all of it is hot, again, it conducts heat. So therefore, part of it ends up getting roasted by the heat of the spit rather than directly by the heat of the fire. The Pasuk says that the Korban Pesach has to be roasted with fire, not roasted because of something else. We're going to have examples of that kind of thing in connection with the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it. where you have a problem where it's being roasted by the heat of something else. So therefore, it's no good. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine, so you have to use wood. Why davka pomegranate wood? V'nesi shel deko. Why don't we use a piece of wood from a palm tree? The answer is aidi de isle shivi. The problem is that that wood from a palm tree has cracks in it. So therefore, mapik maya. So therefore, liquid comes out of the sap comes out of the wood as you're roasting with it through the cracks. V'havakim avoshal, and therefore it becomes, it's like the korban pesach is being cooked. Now it doesn't mean, I mean the you know, we're saying you're supposed to use a spit of pomegranate wood, but yeah, you use a spit of some other kind of wood. It is kosher. We're only saying it's like mavoshal with metal. It would actually be out and out possible. But still, why do we prefer pomegranate wood is why the Gemara is explaining. Okay, so if you tried to use wood from a palm tree, the problem is it's got cracks in it. Okay, v'nesi shel te'ena, what about, why don't we use wood from a fig tree? The answer is because there you have a different problem. Aidin machalcho, the branches of the fig tree are hollow and they have sap inside them. So again, mapik maya, so sap will come out through the parts that you cut the branch off of the tree after all using a saw. So therefore you have open places on the branch where sap can come out, and therefore again, v'havalekim avoshal, and again it's like it's cooked, sort of. Okay, what about v'nesi shel aloyin shel choro v'shel shikma? Why don't we take a piece of wood from an oak tree or a carob tree or a shikma, a sycamore tree? And the answer is Aidi de Ispe Kitri, because those branches all have knots on them. They all have places where you have smaller branches come out of a larger branch. So therefore, you have to cut those off. You have to cut those off because you need a smooth, straight piece of wood to use as a spit. You can't have one where there are branches sticking out from it all over the place. So therefore it's got knots, and you have to cut off those branches with a knife or a saw or whatever. So again, therefore, so mapik maya, so sap will come out. So the question is, like you said, shorima nami ispe kitri, a pomegranate tree also has sub branches. The answer is shi kitri. The difference is that the knots on it are smooth. So you don't have to smooth them out. You can just break off the branch or whatever that's attached to there. You don't then have to smooth it out with a knife or something, and then therefore you have a problem where liquid can come out. The iboy seimo, or another possibility, what you do is to begin with benavga barshata. To begin with, you use a branch from a young pomegranate tree, which is less than a year old, delespe kitri, where it doesn't have knots in it because it hasn't yet grown sub branches. So we're not saying that with a sap, we're not saying it's actually bishul to the extent that it would passel it, but we're saying lachatchila, we try to avoid that. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, well, it could be paske. Okay, but after all, again, you're talking about a branch, which means you have to cut it off from the tree. So you have the end where you cut off. What about sap is going to come out over there? The answer is the mapik lebe paske levar. Okay, what you do is you make sure that the cut end is outside the animal. So yeah, again, we said that the spit, you have one end of it at the mouth of the animal, the other end going all the way through to the anus. So you make sure that the end that was cut is outside the mouth, and that way, if any juice comes out, if any sap comes out of it, then it's not going to get into the Pesach. It's going to drip down into the fire. It has to be long enough, obviously. Yeah. So the Gemara says, "Masnisin deloikir of Yehuda." Now, our Mishnah, which is saying that you dafka have to use a wooden spit, is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, because we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, "Kishem sheshfud shel etz ein nisraf." Just as you see when you roast something on a wooden spit, you see that the part that's inside the animal doesn't get burned because the actual body of the meat, the actual body of the korban, protects it from the heat of the fire, and therefore it doesn't get burned. The same way with a metal spit, what's the problem? The part inside the animal is not going to get hot enough to be a problem of that it's going to roast the animal with its heat. So the Chum said that's the problem. The difference is, again, metal conducts heat. So if part of it is hot, all of it is hot. Whereas wood is not like that. Wood doesn't conduct heat. So therefore, we can't use metal after all. Okay. we said in the mission of Anoisinus Krov, we said you place the legs and the intestines of the animal. So we had two opinions. We had Rabbi Yossi Aglili saying that you put them inside the animal and they roast over there. And Rabbi Akiva saying that no, you hang them on the spit outside the animal's body next to its head. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Shmuel Kairehu Toich Toich. Rabbi Shmuel called it that. Rabbi Shmuel held, like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that you put them inside it. So therefore, he called it toich toich, which is the kind of noise that it makes when it's inside over there and it's roasting, that it makes a sound, like sometimes you have things on the pot that's bubbling and then whatever, so it makes a sound like that. Rashi brings another girsa, and the word is not toich toich, but tachbar. Tachbar means when you take an animal, we're going to talk about this soon in the Gemara, as far as the halachas of kashrus, when you take an animal and you stuff it. So it's called tachbara, which is short for toich ubar. Toich means the inside, and bar means the outside. So you take them off the animal to begin with and wash them. Now, though, you need to roast them, because ultimately you need to eat them. You have to eat all the meat of the Korban Pesach to the extent possible. Yeah, the intestines, okay, people don't always eat intestines. Look, if you're not going to eat them, then they're going to become noser and they're going to get burnt. But you have to roast them, and maybe somebody will eat them. Maybe, you know, after all... In those days, they ate everything, first of all. Second of all, you know, you can have somebody could take some meat from the Pesach or from something else or whatever and stuff it in there and make like a sausage and eat it like that, whatever, yeah. Anyway, so Rabbi Shmuel, according to this Girsa and Rashi, called it tachbar, which means it's like a stuffed animal, because that's what it is. In other words, that you have the kraim and b'nei me'ayim inside it, as if it was stuffed with them. Reb Tarfin called it a gdima kulos. He held, like Reb Akiva, that you have to have the kraim and bnei me'ayim outside the animal. Therefore, makulos means with a helmet. So it's like a soldier with a helmet above his head. The same way you have these things wrapped around the spit above the head of the animal. So it's like a helmet. A different explanation also is. A different related explanation is that the word makulos means that he has weapons with him because, again, you have the body of the Korban Pesach, and then you have these things next to it, like the weapons, like a soldier's weapons next to him. Okay. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Ezo gdi makulos to also lecho b'leile Pesach bizman hazeh. What is the definition of gdi makulos, which you're not allowed to eat on Pesach night nowadays? Now, according to Rashi says that Rashi refers back to, we learned in the fourth perek about Mokum Shenagu and Mokum Shalai Nagu, that there are places where they have the minhag to eat roast meat on Pesach night and places where they have the minhag not to. Rashi says we're talking about it over here in a place where the minhag is to eat, where the minhag is not to eat roast meat, so then you're not allowed to eat this. Now, it seems from Rashi, in other words, that in places where the minhag is you can eat roast meat, then you would actually be allowed to eat even a gdima kulos. And the Urzarua, in fact, explains Rashi that way. However, most Rishonim disagree with that based on the Gemara earlier on Daf Nun Gimel and say that no, a gdima kulos, as we're going to define it now, you're not allowed to eat anywhere, whether the minhag is to eat roast meat or not, because that looks very much like a Korban Pesach. And it's prepared in the same way, after all. If you're not going to make it, makulos, if you're going to, as the Gemara is going to say, you've cut off a piece or something, then it's not also completely to eat on Pesach night. Then it depends on the local minhag whether you eat roast meat. We Ashkenazim have the minhag, we don't eat roast meat, which is why we don't even eat the Zroya. I think Sfardim do eat roast meat on Pesach night. Makulos, we said, means with a helmet. Yeah. With the kraim and b'nei me'ayim outside of it on the spit, right. Because you have it's all on the spit, so therefore it's all wrapped around the spit. So those are on one part of the spit, and then are getting roasted by the fire. The actual Korban Pesach itself is further along on the spit, and it's also getting roasted by the fire. Yeah. That's fine. But what we're saying now is that, again, we had a machlokas in the Mishnah of what you do with the kraim and b'nei me'ayim. Do you put them inside or outside? If we put them outside, then we nickname that gdima kulos. Now, that's all fine. The Korban Pesach has to be done that way. But to eat a gdima kulos nowadays would look like we're eating kodshim outside the Bais Mikdash. That's the point. So what is the definition of gdima kulos for this purpose? Kol shetzloi, kol ha-ke'echad, if you roasted it all together, like the Korban Pesach, where you roasted it all in one piece. Nechtach mimeno aver, but if you cut off a limb from it, or nishlak mimeno aver, or if one limb of it was cooked, ain's a makulos, then it's not, then ain's a gdima kulos, then it's not considered a gdima kulos, and then therefore, so again, according to Rashi, it would mean that you are, that in a place where makam shenagu, where they do have a minhag to eat roast meat, you would even be allowed to eat this. According to everybody else, we're saying, according to both, it's not considered a gdima kulos, so it's not considered a gdima kulos, so then it depends on the local minhag whether you eat roast meat or not. So the Gemara asks, why do we have to mention both? If a limb was cut off or if a limb was cooked, hashti yeshlema nechtech amenu aver. Now you're saying even if a limb was cut off and then nothing else was done with it, and you're saying even if you take that aver and roast it together with it, amrit loy, and you're saying nevertheless it's not considered a gdima kulas and there's no issu on eating it, nishlak miboya, would it need to be said if you not only cut off that piece but actually cooked it as well? Of course, it's even less like a gdima kulas then. The answer is, so Rav Sheshe says, what it means is, let's say you cooked part of the animal while it was still attached. Imagine, let's say, for example, you took a leg or the tail or something of it, and then dipped it in boiling water and cooked it while it's still attached to the rest of the animal. So you would think that now when you put it on the spit to roast it, it's going to be still a gdima kulos. No, because it's still not like the Korban Pesach, because none of the Korban Pesach was allowed to be boiled or cooked. Yeah. Tosfos actually discusses over here that in principle we're going to have a Gemara tomorrow, which Tosfos over here learns means you're actually allowed to cut the Korban Pesach into pieces and roast it. You're not required to roast it all together like we're saying in our Mishnah. That's a better way of doing it. But if you cut it up into pieces and roasted it, then it's still good. The Rambam also paskins that way. Rashi over there says that no, it just means that you cut it in some place, like you slashed it in some places, but it's still, yeah, so that the heat could get into it better, but you didn't actually cut it into pieces. But nevertheless, the point is, even though you are Yotze, the Korban Pesach, but that way, nevertheless, the Chachamim weren't going to go so far as to say that if you do that nowadays, then it's an Isser, only if you roast it all together the way the Korban Pesach is done l'chatchila. Interesting, by the way, worth mentioning, by the way, an interesting side point over here. The Rambam and the Ravid have a very sharp argument on the question of what about, we know that meat usually you have to kasher it, but okay, instead of here we're roasting it and that serves instead of the kashering, but what about the gidanosha, what about the various krumim, the various membranes, and then blood vessels and all that you usually have to take out from meat before you eat it? So, Shesi Ve'erev is only for the udder, and this is a male animal. It doesn't have an udder, but that's right. So, the Rambam says that you don't clean it out of the gidanosha and the other membranes and whatever before you roast it. You roast it whole, like we're saying over here. As you're eating it, you take out those pieces as you come to them. So in other words, with the blood vessels, fine. You have to cut them open, let's say, so the blood can come out. But fine, that's still, the Korban Pesach is still whole. But the Rambam holds, you don't take out the Gidanosha. The Ravid argues very sharply on that. The Ravid says, absolutely not. How could you possibly eat it with the Gidanosha and the fat around the Gidanosha is there? And we're going to learn later on in our perek that we don't eat the fat around the Gidanosha, even though Minatoda, it's Mutter. So how could you do that? And the Krumim and whatever. And the Ravid says, if I have the schus to have a Korban Pesach brought, and they make one like the way that Rambam is saying, I'll throw it on the ground because I hold such a thing would be possible. There are, in fact, Achronim we'll talk about, I think the Chafetz Chaim brings it as a possibility in Lekutei Halachas, that maybe, in fact, in this case, we do override the usual rule about not eating the fat around the Gidanosha, and we eat it, because after all, it's Midat Torah, it's able to be eaten, and you have to eat the meat of the Korban. The Gidanosha itself doesn't give a flavor, ain't begidin benoisin tam, so there's no problem that flavor of it went into the other meat. The fat of it, he learns that you maybe would be allowed to eat, because after all, you have a mitzvah to eat all the meat. And then that would end for the Rambam. Another possibility is that maybe not. Okay, you can't eat the fat, but nevertheless, we're not going to go so far. We're not going to apply the rule and say that's going to assur the meat around it because it absorbed from that fat, given that it is only also the Rabbanon. This is not cooking, this is roasting, that's different. But yeah, so okay, so you open up the blood vessels in order that the blood can drain out, right? Right, so that's, so okay, so maybe you have to cut open the blood vessels, but yeah. All right. So now we're going to get into, now speaking of blood, now we're going to get into a discussion of dinim of kashrus as they relate to blood in meat. So it starts out, now we're not going to actually mention, we're going to briefly mention our Mishnah in that connection, but then we're going to go on to, we're going to talk about the, in a more general way. So Amar Rabba, Hai Muyasa Shavya. Rabba says, you're allowed to make stuffed meat, which means, in other words, that what you do is you take, let's say Rashi describes a sheep or a chicken or whatever, and then you stuff it. Now, nowadays, when you usually use stuff, you like use bread stuffing or whatever. But in those times, or maybe even some people do this now, they used to stuff it with meat. So they would have meat inside meat. So now Rashi learns, we're talking about over here, even if the meat inside had not previously been cooked, or even if it hadn't been previously been salted, or Rashi says, even if it was only salted a little bit, like the way you do when you roast meat, because when you cook meat, you have to salt it completely. You have to do you have to melicha all over and leave the salt on for a while. When you're roasting, Rashi says you only salt it a little bit, because mostly the heat of the fire is going to draw out most of the blood. So you salt it a little bit. So let's say over here, this meat that you're stuffing it with was only salted a little bit, like the way you do for roasting. Nevertheless, it would be mutter, as we're going to say in the Gemara. Why? Tosfos has a long discussion about this, and among other things, Tosfos says you actually don't need to salt in order to roast meat at all. If you're going to roast it, you bechlal don't need to salt it. In fact, the Tzlach on our Mishnah and our Gemara says that with the Korban Pesach you wouldn't be allowed to, but because he says then it would be tzli machmas davar acher, to a certain extent, then it gets roasted by the heat of the salt rather than it brings up the temperature. Yes, so yeah. Anyway, so Tosfos says that actually no, you don't have to salt meat for roasting it at all. In fact, so in Shulchan Aruch it mentions that in principle you don't have to, like Tosfos is saying. The minig is to do it like Rashi, to roast it, to salt it a little bit when you're roasting meat. Never if you didn't kasher it previously. Nevertheless, if you didn't, then b'di'evit it's not going to be also. When I was learning smicha, they talked about what does a person do if they're on a low sodium diet. So regular kosher meat is going to be a problem. It absorbs a lot of salt during the melicha process, and even after you wash it off, you still have some of it is embedded in it. It's no good for such a person. You have achronim actually talk about interesting questions. Maybe you can do melicha with sugar. Maybe you can do melicha with salt substitutes. And there are achronim who say maybe, but the better thing to do, therefore, is just roast it for him, and then follow what Tosfos is saying over here, that you don't have to salt it at all, or even maybe like Rashi, you only have to salt it a little bit, and then that way that's the person will be able to eat it that way. What? Cornichons are an example of that. They're very salty, yeah, because they have to be, yeah, because the salt stays in there. Okay. So Rabba is saying again that if you have this meat, so you didn't salt it properly, you didn't kasher it fully, you just put a little salt on it the way you would do if you were going to roast it, as Rashi says, or as Tosfos says, you didn't salt it at all. And you're stuffing the inside of a chicken or a lamb or whatever with it, it's mutter. So Abaye says, how could you do that? Isn't it going to absorb blood? So he tells him, the same way as it absorbs, the same way it'll exude it. Because what happens is you're roasting it. Ultimately, what we're talking about over here, this muyasa, you're not cooking it in a pot. You're roasting it over the fire. So therefore, the result is the heat of the fire will schlep out the blood. And therefore, any blood that the shell, that the shell absorbed from the meat inside it will just come out through the heat of the fire. So you stuffed it before you roasted it. So what you do is so the way Rashi is learning it is like this. You have, there's the chicken, let's say. Then you take the body of the chicken, you stuff it with meat which was not properly kashered. And now you're putting it over the fire too, and then you like sew it shut or something, and then you put it over the fire to roast. So Rabba is saying such a thing is allowed. You have blood in the inu meat that's going to come out. Rabba is saying it'll go into the body of the chicken, but then it'll be schlepped out of there through the fire. So therefore, we're fine. In Shulchan Aruch, actually, it talks about it's actually not so simple. In the Shulchan Aruch and in the Shach over there, it talks about various permutations. What happens if the meat on the inside is? What happens if the meat on the inside is not kashered, but the meat on the outside is? Then maybe we're gonna say that not, because the meat on the outside then is not exuding anything. Nothing is coming out of it because the blood was already taken out of it. So maybe we wouldn't say kibbolah kach polter then. Okay. Anyway. So the Gemara says, name a Messiah. Can we say that we can support what Rabbah is saying based on our Mishnah? We said that according to Rabbi Yosi Aglili and according to Rabbi Yishmael, noitzin es krov ves b'nei me'ev l'seichai. You take the legs and the kishkis of the animal of the Korban Pesach and put them inside it. Now, how does that work if you didn't kasher them? My timer, how could that work? Lav mishum da'amin et kabola kach peltoi. L'chura, it's on this basis of kabola kach peltoi, that even if the shell, the side walls of the Korban Pesach absorb blood from these things that are inside it, it'll exude it right out into the fire. The answer is Amri, they said that's not a proof. Shiny hossam, it's different in that case, kiven de ikka besa shchita, because in this case, you're roasting it with the besa shchita, with the incision in the neck hanging down, the mechalchol, which is open, which is hollow, therefore made of divi, therefore the blood can flow out of there. But that's not necessarily a proof when it comes to mulyasa, where you sew it shut afterwards, and therefore there's not really as much room for the blood to be able to come out. So they had it head down, exactly. That's the point. Yeah, so that's the point. So any blood that absorbed from the inside, so it's now, may not even absorb from these things in the first place. It may just flow down through the inside of it and come out through the neck. Okay. The Gemara says, fine, name a Messiah. Can we say that we can support Rabbah's din from another Mishnah? Halev kodei umotzias domei, the heart of an animal, you need to, before you cook it or before you roast it, you need to tear it open, cut it open or whatever, and take out the blood that's inside it. Loi kroi, but if you didn't do that, then you're allowed to do that after it was cooked. Now, Rashi says, we're assuming at this point that the word bishul over here means roasting it. In other words, we're not going to say if it was cooked in a pot. Come on, you can't say, l'chodeh, you can't say that it should be kosher. But if it was roasted, then we're saying b'dievet, it would be mutter. We do find in some places where the word bishul means cook, means roasting. So my timer and umulter, and it would be mutter. My timer, now how could it be mutter? Lav mishum d'armin et kabola kach polter. L'chura, the reason is because we would say that the heart, the it absorbs blood from the inside of it during the roasting, but then it goes right back out because the heat of the fire pulls it out. Yeah, opens the pores and let it go. The answer is the Gemara says no. Shiny lave de shia. No, the heart is a special case because the muscles of it are smooth. So therefore, it doesn't really have pores to absorb the blood on the inside of it in the first place. So therefore, you could say that now at the end, after you roasted it, then it's not only roasting. Now we could say that even if it was in a pot, then we would say that it's mutter b'dievet because it won't have absorbed from the blood that's inside it. But so this doesn't necessarily show that where it absorbs blood on one side, that it should exude it from the other side, lav davka. although, now, with that said, now, does that mean we actually paskin that way? There are Rishonim who say that yes, that the heart, that the heart is taka, an exception to regular meat, and if you didn't kasher it ahead of time, then b'dievet will be mutter, even if it was cooked in a pot. Tosfos over here says that no. That this is only a dichui ba'alma. This is only, the Gemara is using that as like, you can't necessarily prove from that Mishnah like Rabbah. But nevertheless, that doesn't mean that actual halacha has to be that way. The actual halacha could be that even with the heart, if you cooked it, then it is going to be osur. And this is how it's paskin in Shulchan Aruch. Only if you roasted it, then fine. We can say kabola kach pelto, maybe, yeah. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says, Eini. So is that so? So still, you're telling me then that, you're telling me that kibola kach peltoi, that you have, that blood is going to exude out of it while it's roasting. But v'ha Ravin sava, we find that Ravin the elder, or on the side by him, I mean, it says Rav Yeva sava, anyway, tafle ahu bar goizla l'rav, he one time took a young pigeon, which had not been kashered, it hadn't been, because he was going to be roasting it. So either, like Rashi says, it had been salted only a little bit, the way you would to roast meat, or according to Tosfos, it hadn't been salted at all. And he put on it tafle. Now Rashi explains that tafle means that he covered it with a layer of dough. Rashi uses a French word for it, pashtida, which eventually became a word in Lashon Kodesh as well. It means like kind of a pie. They used it in later Sfarim. They use it for like pie or kugel or whatever. So it became like a meat pie or like a krepel or something where you have meat covered by a layer of dough. Tosfos says that's not what it's talking about. First of all, it can't be that. First of all, the word toflu doesn't suggest a thick layer of dough. The word toflu suggests more like a paste. So first of all, the word toflu means more like a paste. And second of all, how could you say, we're going to discuss the question of Kabbalah Kachpote. You see, when you make a meat pie, that there's no perlet, because you can see, even you put it in the oven, and the place where it's sitting in the oven remains dry. Nothing comes out through the shell of the pie. So obviously, you can't say Kabbalah Kachpote. So therefore, Tosfos says, rather, that what we're talking about over here is he smeared it with a thin layer of flour. So sort of like breading. So Rashi is saying it's more like a meat pie. Tosfos is saying it's more like when you make breaded chicken or whatever. Anyway, so he did that, and then he roasted it. Now, the question is, is there a problem that, is there a problem then that the flour will have absorbed blood from the bird that it's covering? And v'omale, so Rav says, imale tafle, if the shell or the breading or whatever is good, havli v'echol, then give me some of it and I'll eat it. So in other words, the question is now, so Rashi says, actually, this is another attempted proof for Rabba's din that we're saying that Muyaseh is allowed the same, because we say Kabbalah Kachpote the same way we would say over here, it's poilet through the flour, and therefore that it ends up we don't consider that maybe there was blood still inside it, and it would be also we say that all the blood comes out. The answer is the Gemara says Ahib Smida. That's a special case, because you're not just talking about any kind of flour. You're talking about fine flour over there. You're talking about soilus. Soilus is more, it's more crumbly. It's more like the consistency of, you can buy nowadays, they call it semolina. So it doesn't stick together that tightly anyway. So therefore, the blood can easily go out without any of it getting absorbed into this breading or into this shell or whatever, into this crust, that's the word I'm looking for. So into the crust, according to Rashi, or the breading, according to Tosfos, it's loose enough, it's crumbly enough that the blood can easily flow out. So it's not necessarily a proof for Rabba's din about Muyasa. It's not a question either, but it's not a proof. Okay. But then the Gemara says, now on the other hand, Vaharava Ikla Labeiresh Golosa. Now on the other hand, we have a case where Rava one time visited the house of the Resh Golosa. Now, by the way, at the beginning of the sugya, when we said that Rabba says that Muyasa is also, there are Rishonim who have the Girsa that's not Rabba, but rather Rava. So in that case, the Gemara would be asking now a contradiction from another din of Rava's in this connection. If we say that over there it's Rabba, then it's not a contradiction, because obviously Rabba and Rava can be disagreeing. What the Gemara is trying to figure out then, according to that, is there anybody who disagrees with Rabba's din? So Rava one time visited the house of the Resh Golosa, the Toflu Le Bar Abza. They made something like that. They made a goose. They prepared a goose in a pie, in a pie crust, according to Rashi, or in breading, according to Tosfos. Omar, and he says, Eloid Chazise, if it weren't for the fact that I had seen the breading or the crust afterwards, dizig kizuza chivra, that it's as clear and white as white glass, loy achlimine, I wouldn't have eaten from it. In other words, what he's saying is, if there was any red in this crust or in this breading, then I wouldn't have eaten from it, because it means that it absorbed blood from the bird. Only because I see that it's still white and clear, and the liquid that's dripping out is clear. Therefore, I'm willing to eat from it. No, so that's the thing. He's saying juice is coming out, but I see that all the juice is clear. I see that all the juice is clear, and the flour and the crust or the breading is still staying white. Therefore, I'm willing to eat from it. Now, the question is, if we say the concept like Rabba is saying of Kabbalah Kachpelte, my iria kizig, who cares if the crust remains white? Afilu kiloi zignami, even if it doesn't stay white, you could still say fine and absorb blood, but then it exuded it right out, and what you have left is just like a discoloration or something, and therefore it should be mutter. Right, it flowed out into the fire, but it got absorbed out of it. It went out of the meat. It got absorbed into the crust, and then it got exuded out of the crust. Kabbalah Kachpelte. So why is Rava insisting that the crust has to remain white? So the Gemara says, Hosam b'chivarta, the difference is that there we're talking about that they used white flour, regular flour, not like we were saying before, soilus, semolina. Here they were using regular flour like the kind we have. The sharu, now it sticks very tightly together. So a crust of it, nothing is going to come out of that crust. Or according to Tosfos, we're talking about breading, the same idea, nothing's going to come out of that breading. So therefore, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have blood that's in there. You're going to have blood left in. So now if the crust or the breading becomes red, then yeah, there's good reason to think that it absorbed blood and didn't exude it. Therefore, Rava is saying that would have been a problem. Okay, and the Gemara says, v'hilchsa, the bottom line halacha as far as crusts and breading is like this. Dismida. If you used soilus, which we said before is crumbly, then bein asmik bein lai asmik shalya, then it's mutter, the crust is mutter, whether it became red or not, because even if it became red, we can say that it absorbed blood, it exuded it right away because it's crumbly. The red that you see is just meat juice. So therefore, you don't have to worry about it. Dechivauta, on the other hand, if they use regular white flour, like the kind we have, then like Rava says, only if it's still white and clear, like white glass, only then is it mutter. And if not, it's going to be osu, because we say it may have it absorbed blood and didn't necessarily exude all of it. If the crust or the breading is made out of other kinds of flour, then asmik also. If it becomes red, then it becomes also, because then we assume that there's still blood left in it. Loy asmik shari, and if it didn't become red, then even if it's not clear like white glass, but the actual crust didn't become red, then it'll be mutter. Lamaisa and Shulchan Aruch, it says, we don't have really the expertise to be able to tell between these different kinds of things. So therefore, in general, we say any time you're going to make a pie or bread and meat or whatever, make sure it's kashered first. And then you don't have a problem. So you always see red coming out, right? So the question is, how much of that red is blood and how much of it is meat juice, right? Yeah, okay. And the Gemara finishes off. What about we started this discussion by talking about muyasa, where you take meat and stuff it inside a chicken or a lamb or something. So as far as the muyasa, manda osir, whoever holds that it's osir because he doesn't hold of kabola kachpoltoi, he would say afilu pumala sachas. He would say it's osir even if it's mouth down. Now Tosfos says it's one thing when you have like the korban pesach, it's a very wide thing. It's a very wide incision. So even this manda amma would allow it. But in the case of a chicken, let's say where it's smaller, he wouldn't. Umanda shori, whoever says it's mutter, for example, Rabba, would say afilu pumala el. He would say it's mutter even if the mouth of the animal is upward, even though lachora you can't say the blood is going to drain out through there, but you still have kabola kachpelta. It'll get absorbed into the walls of the outer animal of the chicken, let's say, or whatever, and then it'll exude right out of there because the heat of the fire will pull it out. So therefore, it doesn't matter whether it has an actual place to drain out of. That's what the Gemara is saying, yeah. And v'hilchsa, the bottom line halacha, muyasa shari, afilu pumala el, so it is mutu even if the mouth is upward. With that said, actually, the Rambam has a shitta that, no, the only way we would be matur it, he says, so first of all, it comes out from pretty much all the Rishonim that we are talking about only if you're going to roast it. The Rambam actually goes beyond. The Rambam is even more machmir. He says, even if the inner meat was kashered and the outer meat was kashered, nevertheless, the only way a muyasa is going to be mutter is only if you're roasting it. Even though they were both kashered, muyasa we just said is stuffed meat. Yeah, but so the Rambam holds even if both of them were kashered, then you still have a problem. The Ravid disagrees with that, and so do most other Rishonim. They say if both of them were kashered, there's not a problem. You could even cook it in a pot because what's the problem? You're in a pan or something in the oven because what's the problem? Everything came out. Only if one or the other of them or neither of them was kashered properly, then you talk about the various dinim that we have over here when it's mutter and when not. Okay. Since we're talking about issues involving blood in cooking, so now the Gemara brings another thing in that connection. We have three machloikas in on the following. Umtsa, you have a piece of meat where blood collected inside it. So let's say, for example, you had while the animal was alive, it got injured. So blood collected in a clot in one place. And now you shechted the animal. Now you want to take that piece of meat and prepare it to eat. So what do you have to do in order to make it kosher? So that's one. Number two, bei. Number two, the beitzim, the beitzim of a male. So Rashi says we're talking about also da'asmik. We're also talking about where they became red. In other words, Rashi holds ordinarily there wouldn't be a problem only if they became red. Again, because of an injury or something, then you have to talk about what you have to do, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Tosfos says you don't even need that. Tosfos springs from Rabbeinu Hananel, Bechlal, the beitzim are covered with a membrane which has blood vessels in it, which is very rich in blood vessels. So therefore, no matter what, you always have, so therefore, the din that we're going to discuss in the Gemara is going to apply even if the animal had never been injured over there. So that's number two. And number three, umizriki, the third one is the blood vessels in the neck. So if you want, those also, if you want to prepare those to eat, what do you have to do with them? So the Gemara says, Pligi bar Rav Acha v'Ravina. Rav Acha and Ravina have an argument what the din is about them, as we're going to discuss in a minute. And the Gemara interjects, by the way, you should know, B'chola Torah kola Rav Acha l'chumra v'Ravina l'kola. Everywhere else in Torah where you have machlokas, Rav Acha and Ravina, you usually have Rav Acha is the one who's machmir, and Ravina is the one who's mekel. V'hilchsa k'Ravina l'kola. And the halacha in those cases is like Ravina, who's the mekel. Levar mehani tlas, with the exception of these three things that we just said, umtzabeu mizriki, we're there, it's the other way around. Rav Acha l'kola v'Ravina l'chumra. Rav Acha is the one who's mekel, Ravina is the one who's machmir. V'hochzak Rav Acha l'kola, and in all these three, the halacha is like Rav Acha, who is mekel. So in other words, it comes out in all the machlokas of Rav Acha and Ravina, the halacha is always like the one who's mekel, the one who's always, it's always the kola, usually like Ravina, in these three cases, it's like Rav Acha. Anyway, what is the machloika? So it's like this. Number one, let's talk about umsa, the case again where you have a piece of meat where the animal was injured while it was alive and you have a collection of blood someplace in the meat. So high umsa de asmik, so you have a piece of meat where there's red in it because of blood that collected someplace. Now, if you cut into that place where the blood is collected, and then you salted it, then it'll be mutter even to cook it in a pot, because that'll allow all the blood to get out. Then once you cut it, then that'll allow the salt to do its work and get out the blood. Shafte b'shfuda, also if you put it on a spit and want to roast it over the fire, also shori, it'll also be mutter, made of dayev, because again, the blood will flow out. Now the machlokas becomes if you put it on the coals to roast on top of the coals. So now, pligi bar Rav Acha bar Ravina, here's where you have the machlokas, Rav Acha and Ravina, chad also v'chad shori. One says it's also, one says it's mutter. As we just said, Ravina is the one who says it's also, Rav Acha is the one who's saying it's mutter. And the reason for their machlokas, manda osar, the one who says it's also, he says the problem is mitzmas tzomis. What putting it directly on the coals, what it causes is the meat shrivels up, the pores close up, therefore the blood ends up getting stuck inside the meat, and it doesn't come out. Now it is like this. There is a halacha that dam ha'ivorim is mutter as long as loy pirash. If you have blood inside meat and it never left its original place from when the meat was cut off the animal, you are technically allowed to eat it. However, if it was porish, if it came out and then it gets reabsorbed into the meat, then you have a problem. So Ravina is saying over here that that's what's going to happen. If you have this, you have this piece of meat. There's a collection of blood. There's a blood clot someplace inside the meat from an injury. Now that's dam ha'ivorim shapirish, came out from its original place. Now what's going to happen is when you put it directly on the coals, it's not going to allow it to come out. The blood is not going to come out because it doesn't have any place to flow to because the coals are directly underneath it. It's going to wind up getting shriveled and stuck in place. Therefore, the meat's going to be ulcer. So that's the thing. Well, that's what Ravina is saying, right? That if it's directly on the coals, then yeah, it does. Umanda Shori, where's Rav Acha, who says that it's mutter? He says Mishav Shoyv. He says even in that case, the heat will pull out the blood. V'hilchsa Mishav Shoyv. The halacha is in fact that the blood will pull it. That the heat, even if it's directly on the coals, will pull it out, and therefore it's mutter. V'chein Bei. The same thing when it comes to the Beitzei Zohar, the testicle. Again, Rashi says only if they turn red. Tosfos says regardless. Same idea. Chaschinu u'malchinu, if you cut them and then you salted them, then afilu l'kdeir shalyan, you'd be allowed even to cook it in a pot because then you did a complete kashering on it. Tolinu b'shvuda, also if you hung them from a spit, shalyan, then again they're made of dayev, because again, the blood will certainly have where to flow away. Because remember, it's hanging over the fire, so there's room for the blood to drip out. Achsinu Agumri, if you put them on the coals, they are pligi berav Acha berav Ravina. That's where again Rav Acha and Ravina argue chad also chad shori, where one of them Ravina is saying it's also, and the other one Rav Acha is saying it's mutter. Same idea, manda osir. Ravina, who says it's osir, says mitzmas tzomis, because it's going to shrivel up the meat, and therefore the blood is going to stay where it is, and it's the blood is going to stay where it is, and it's going to be osir. Umanda shori, the Rav Acha, who says it's mutter, he says mishav shoyiv, instead, rather the heat of the coals will pull out the blood. V'chein mizri, and the same thing as far as the blood vessels in the neck. If you cut them up and salt them, then you're allowed to even cook them in a pot. Talya b'shvuda, if you put them on a spit, and you put the side where the animal was shechted, where it's cut downward, then it's fine. Shori, then it's mutter, made of dayev, because the blood will be able to flow out through there. But if you put it on coals, pligi rachavidavina chad osav chad shori. Again, manda osav mitzmas tzomis. The one who asks says because the coals will make it shrivel up. Umanda shori mishav shoyiv. The one who says it's mutter says because the heat will pull out the blood. Vehuchsa mishav shoyiv. And the halacha is that in fact it is mutter because in all these cases because the heat will pull out the blood. As far as the blood vessels, by the way, it does mention in Shulchan Aruch yesh oimrim. I think it brings from the Rashba that this only applies if you have the blood vessels by themselves, like you took them out of the neck and now you're roasting them by themselves. But if you have a complete neck with the blood vessels inside, then it's not so simple. Then you actually have to kasher it properly, or you have to, if you're going to roast it, then you have to roast it hanging over the fire, not directly on the coals, because then there's, for sure, there's a lot of blood in the other muscles in the neck, and therefore you're going to end up with the, you're going to end up that not all of it is going to get out as a result of the heat. So that's what we're saying. So with the carbon Pesach, it's hanging on a spit over the fire. Therefore, you don't. So you may have to cut. Well, in the case of the blood vessels in the neck, those were cut during the shechita anyhow. But the testicles. So again, maybe you would. We're saying over here that if you put them on a spit, then it doesn't matter. You don't need to do anything else. Just the fact that they're on a spit above the fire, the heat is going to be enough to pull out the blood from them. No. I mean, the spit means you put it on a piece of wood. You have a piece of wood stuck through it from end to end, and it's hanging over the fire. So therefore, so it's hanging over the fire. The heat of the fire will be enough to take out the blood. Yeah. Okay. Onward. Hai umtsa de asmik. Now we have another din regarding meat that became red, where we said before that there were. Now, according to Rashi, we're still talking about the same kind of thing. We're talking about where you have. So 1 second. Hai umtsa de asmik. You have meat that became red again because there's blood collected someplace in it because of an injury. So now, chalye osir, the chalye of it is osir. So Rashi says two possibilities. One is it means that even if you roasted it and now it's mutter to eat, nevertheless, the juice that comes out of it when you cut it will still be osir. Rashi says that's Rashi's first lashon. Rashi's second lashon is, what happens is that after you roast meat, you put it in vinegar and the vinegar causes whatever blood is left in it to come out. So now, therefore, that vinegar, chalya, can also mean vinegar, would be also because now it's got blood in it. Ravina. So on the other hand, loy asmik, but if the meat didn't turn red, chalya shari, then the juice that comes out of it, according to Rashi's first lashon, or the vinegar that you put it in, according to the second lashon, will be mutter because there's no reason to be concerned that there's blood in it. Ravina amar afilu loy asmik nami chalya osir. Ravina says even if it didn't turn red, that juice or that vinegar is still going to be osir. E efshar the less base suraiki dama, because inevitably there's little streaks of blood in it that you may not notice. On the other hand, amale mar bar amema. On the other hand, mar bar amema says to Ravina, you should know. Amale mar bar amema lot of ashi. On the other hand, mar bar amema says to Ravashi, you should know it's completely mutter. Abba megamale gamui. My father, which is amemar, would gulp it down. So he held if the meat didn't turn red that it's mutter. Ikadamri, another version is Rav Ashi gufa megamele gamui, that Rav Ashi himself drank it. So we see, in other words, that it would be mutter. Now this is all according to Rashi. Tosfos has a number of questions on Rashi. I mean, once the meat is roasted, what's the problem with any juice that comes out of it? I mean, the same way as when meat is kashered, we don't worry about any juice that comes out of it afterwards. Why all of a sudden by roasting over here would it be any different? And Tosfos has a couple of other questions on Rashi as well. So Tosfos learns differently. So Tosafos doesn't like either of Rashi's answers. What he says is like this. We're not talking about juice that comes out of the meat. We're not talking about where you roasted the meat and then you put it in vinegar. We're talking about what they would sometimes do is they would take a piece of raw meat and put it in vinegar. And what that would accomplish is if you put it in there for only a short amount of time, what that accomplishes is, yeah, it closes up the pores. The vinegar closes up the pores. What happens, therefore, is, again, the meat, the blood is now dam ha'ivorim shaloi pirish. It's blood that didn't go anywhere. So therefore, it's mutter. It stayed where it was in the blood vessels. It gets shriveled and hardened over there. So fine, it's mutter. It's considered part of the meat. On the other hand, if the meat becomes red inside the vinegar, then it shows that the blood actually came out of the pores, actually came out of the capillaries, and now it's mixed throughout the meat, and now it's mixed in the vinegar as well. So now Tosfos's girsa is not that only the chalya, only the vinegar is also, the meat will be also as well. The meat will be also as well, because now you have blood in it, which moved someplace else, and how are you going to get it out? The Rambam, I think, holds that in that case, you could still roast it, and it'll kasher it, and it'll still be mutter. Other Rishonim disagree and say, even then, it's going to be also. But that, so, yeah. So no, so according to Rashi, what we're talking about is two possibilities. One, we're talking about you roasted it, and then juice is coming out. Another is you roasted it, and then you put it into vinegar. So then Rashi will draw the distinction whether to begin with asmik, whether it became red, like we said before, because it had an injury and therefore there's a collection of blood someplace in it. According to Tosfos, has nothing to do with injuries. It has to do with you put a piece of raw meat into vinegar and now did the meat become red while it's in the vinegar or did it not? And therefore, the question is the meat itself and the vinegar going to be ulcer or not? So we have in the Gemara over here three opinions. We have one opinion is it depends whether the meat became red or not. We have Ravina saying either way it's going to be also because inevitably some blood moved out of its place. And then we have Ma'abar Amema pointing out that actually, no, Amema would actually drink the vinegar, implying that it's mutter. Okay. Amalei Ma'abar Amema Rav Ashi. So Ma'abar Amema points out another thing to Rav Ashi in this connection. Abba, he says, my father, Amemar, hai chala de cholet be choda zimna. If he used vinegar one time to shrink the pores on meat, he used it one time. Again, according to Rashi, we're talking about that it was roasted meat, and he put it in vinegar afterwards in order to close up the pores, and then. Rashi says actually not so much to close the pores, actually the other way around. Rashi says to get out whatever blood is left inside it. Because Rashi is learning that even after the roasting, you still have some blood left in it. So therefore, you put it in vinegar in order to get out the remainder of that blood. So that's the thing. So according to the Manda Amar that you are allowed to, we would say because the amount of blood that gets into it is insubstantial and it's bottle and maybe there wasn't any blood, whatever. Anyway, so we're saying though like this. So you would do that. So now the vinegar that he used for that purpose one time, he wouldn't use that vinegar again the next time for another piece of meat. According to Tosfos, again, what we're talking about is differently. We're talking about that it's raw meat. You're putting it in vinegar in order to close up the pores, the opposite of Rashi, that you're doing it to get out the rest of the blood. You're doing it to close up the pores so the blood stays where it is. So once he did that one time with a batch of vinegar, he wouldn't use that batch of vinegar for another piece of meat to do the same thing. Because once... What? No, it doesn't go into the animal. You take a piece of meat from the animal and put it in vinegar. You soak it in vinegar, right? So the point is Amema would not use that same vinegar again because once it was used one time for putting meat into it, so now it's weaker and now it doesn't have the ability to do the same thing again, to take out the blood according to Rashi or to close up the pores according to Tosfos, yeah. So the question is, so why is it any different than weak vinegar? Sometimes you have, to begin with, vinegar which is weak. Let's say it was sitting on the shelf for a long time and it's sort of spoiled. And the halacha is we are allowed to use it for soaking meat like that. The answer is hosim isil cure de peira be'ene, because the difference is there you have the original sharpness, the original acid from the fruit is still there as it was. It's fine. It's weaker because it's spoiled a little bit, but it still has the same potency as before. Nothing's been taken out of it. Hocha, but over here, if you're already soaked meat in it one time, less a liqueur de peira be'ene, it doesn't have its sharpness, it doesn't have its acidity anymore, because now some of the juice and whatever from the meat got absorbed into it, therefore it doesn't have the same power to accomplish that as far as the meat. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that even though in principle, now it mentions over there this concept that Tosfos is saying that in principle you could put a piece of meat into vinegar, or another possibility is you can put it into boiling water and it'll close up the pores, and therefore the blood will stay where it is, and therefore it's mutter. However, it says in Shulchan Aruch, we're not experts in how to do that and make sure that it actually works properly. After what we said in the Gemara over here, it could have the opposite effect. It could end up becoming red inside the vinegar if you leave it in there too long. So therefore, we don't rely on that. We kasher meat, or we roast it. We kasher it with salting, or we roast it, as the case may be. We don't rely on the schalita. Because if it leaves one part and then gets absorbed into another part, then you have a problem. Exactly. The Rambam, by the way, has a unique shita in this, that even after meat is kashered, he says you still need to, I guess it's a little bit similar to what Rashi is saying over here about roasting, that afterwards you put it in vinegar. The Rambam holds that after you kasher meat the regular way with salting and soaking and the whole nine yards, the Rambam says after that, you have to put it in boiling hot water to close up the pores so no further blood comes out. Everybody else disagrees with him and says that's not necessary. Yeah, so no, that's something else. After you salt meat, you have to wash it off, because you have to get the salt with all the blood that absorbed out. That's hadacha. You have to wash it afterwards. We're talking about the Rambam holds. In addition, after you're done with all of that, you have to dunk it in boiling water. Everybody else disagrees with him and says you don't need to do that. Once you kashered, once you soaked, salted, rinsed, then you're good. You can do whatever you want with that meat. Okay. Yeah, so they're not really boss of a chalav. This is Hilchus Dum and Hilchus Malicha. But yeah. Okay. Shkoyach, everyone.